Evening. So we are, this is going to be Shabbat of Yaakov HaKudei, the last Sedra in Shemot. But there's a second Torah scroll. There are two Torah scrolls this week. And in the second one, it's a section about Pesach, basically. It goes back to an earlier spot in the book of Exodus, where it is just getting ready for going out of Egypt. And so the page that we have in Hebrew and English is from that text that we're going to be reading. Vayoma Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron, God said to Moses and Aaron, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt, Lemor, saying to them, Hachodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodoshim. This month shall be for you the head of the month. Now, this month is the month of Nisan, which is the month we're just coming to. In fact, this Shabbat will be what's called Shabbat Mevorachim. On Shabbat, we will be making a special blessing about the new month. And there are all kinds of different customs about that. And so it's heralding the month of Nisan. Rishon hu lachem lechodshei hashana. This month, the month of Nisan, will be for you the first of the months of the year. And indeed, we give numbers to the months, and as well as names. The names are really a later phenomenon. They came from Babylon. They're really Babylonian names. But the numbers of the months begin off with Nisan being month number one, and so on. So the peculiarity is a peculiar phenomenon that Tishrei, which is the new year, is actually month number seven. So the year begins in the seventh month instead of the first month. So there are all kinds of spiritual meanings to that. But anyway, now this is the opening text with which our discourse, which was said in 1966, begins, and we normally sing this the special melody of the Maimah in order to help us understand it. Oh, Yom Ba Ya 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 Yo Ya Yira Yira Yom Ba Yo. Yamba, ya, yamba, yamba, boom. Ha, yiridamba, ya, yiridamba, yomba, yo. Ya, yiridamba, ya, ya, yo. Ya, yiridamba, yamba, yo. Ha, yiridamba, ha, yiridamba, ho. Ya, ya, yiridamba, ho, ya, yamba, yiridamba. Oh, ya, ya, ho, ya, ya, yo. Okay, so now we plunge into this discourse, which was not edited by the Rebbe, but it was transcribed at the time after it was said on Shabbat, and it was transcribed later on after Shabbat by people who had the ability to remember the whole discourse after just hearing it once. They're still alive, very remarkable people, phenomenal power of focus and the ability, and this, they're called chozrim, chozer, a person who can repeat. Yeah. Hachonesh hazeh lachem rosh chodoshim. This month should be for you the head of the months. Umevi kvot kdushat admo hatzemach tzedek. Now the Rebbe is citing his great-great-great-grandfather, whom he's actually named after, Rabbi Menachem Mendel, the Tzemach Tzedek. He's known as the Tzemach Tzedek. And he passed away in the month of Nisan, the 13th of Nisan, 1866. So that was just 100 years before this discourse is being said in 1966. And what the Rebbe is quoting, Bama'amoro didbu ha-matchil zeh, in his discourse, which begins in the same way, said shortly before the month of Nisan, Mishnat Tafresh Kavav, of the year 1866, Sha'amaro Kodem Hizdalkuto, which he said just before he passed away, shortly before he passed away. So it's like a few weeks to 2 weeks before he passed away, he said this discourse, which our Rebbe in 1966 is quoting. So now, miss out the brackets. Now he quotes Ma Shekatub Bamidrash, what it says in the Midrash, the teachings of the sages. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, this month is for you. Now, what does that mean? Hadahu Dichtiv, that's what it's written. Ashrei Hagoy Asher Hashem Elokav, happy is the nation for whom God is their God. Ha'am Bachal L'Nachalolo, the people who were chosen to be his inheritance. Because one of the central concepts in Jewish thought is the special relationship between the Jewish people and God. God created the whole universe. He cares about the whole universe. Every detail that takes place is significant. Every creature which is there, every human being certainly, is very significant. Nonetheless, there's a special relationship between God and the Jews. Mishabacha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo, when God chose his world, Kava Bo Roshei Chodoshim B'Shanim, he fixed in it that there would be new moons, and there would be the beginning of the year. The whole idea of the beginning of the month and the idea of the beginning of the year. So it's interesting that God is choosing his world. Maybe there are millions of worlds, and God chose this one, that this is where there's going to be this interaction between God, the Jewish people, the giving of the Torah, all the spiritual drama, which is the drama of the history and the life that we are all involved in. And so God chose the world, and in choosing the world meant suddenly that time is something significant, and time being significant, there are the beginnings of the months and the beginnings of the years. Umishabacha beYaakov uBanav, and then he chose Jacob and Jacob's descendants. Then Kava Bo Rosh Chodesh Shel Geula. Then God fixed that there would be a new moon, which is the new moon of redemption. So once you've got a people, the people can be redeemed. If you've only got months and years without a people, then they're there, they might be special. But the word redemption doesn't come in. But once you've got a people can be enslaved or in exile, and then the people can be redeemed. And so God made the beginning of Nisan, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is going to be next week, that is the Rosh Chodesh, the new month, the new moon of redemption. Shabonigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim, and then the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. Uvo atidin lehigarel, and the Midrash goes on to say, and then too they will in the future be redeemed again. Shenema, as it says, ki meitzeitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, like the days of your going out of Egypt, arenu niflaot, I will show you wonders with the going out of our current exile. Now Rosh Chodesh is actually next Tuesday. Next Tuesday will be the first of Nisan, and so that is the day which has this special quality. Now, this is really quite fascinating, you know, and one could explore it in many ways. But let's take the way the discourse proceeds. But it's very intriguing midrash, which could be looked at in all kinds of different ways. Does anyone have any point they want to say?
Well, I just want to make sure I've got it so far. So God chooses a world,
mm-hmm.
and in that world he chooses to have a people who need to be redeemed.
Yeah, well, that's part of the complexity of this people.
But well, I was just going to ask you, but don't wait if you think it's going to distract. Why do they need to be redeemed? Why is that important?
Because they get they get in exile.
Yes, I know, but why does he choose a world where people need to be redeemed?
That is the paradox of existence. The goal of existence is that there should be a world which is finite. Now, finite already immediately suggests limited and in exile. The very fact of there being a finite world, because finitude hides the infinite. The whole nature of the divine is infinite. Once he makes a finite world, like ours, which means he's concealed himself. The first level of exile is the concealment of God in existence. Like this very beautiful thing, which a Russian Jewish philosopher called Lev Shestov said. He wrote books, partly, you know, purely about philosophy, if you like, but also he discussed famous writers. One of them was Dostoevsky. Mm. So Dostoevsky, when he was a young man, was put in prison. He was put in a work camp because he was in some way involved with some kind of, you know, political something. And so he was put in a work camp for 2 years, I think it was. Mm. And on the basis of that, Dostoevsky wrote his first book called, in English, Poor Folk. And it's a completely straight description of his life in this work colony prison. And then, incidentally, there was a Jew in this work camp, and Dostoevsky describes how the Jew was fervently praying one day, and a soldier came up and began talking to him, and the Jew took no notice and just went on praying, and the soldier could have shot him dead, but he didn't. He just left him. So that's like Dostoevsky didn't like Jews, but that was just a little vignette in his book. So then he came out of prison. So Shestov says, all the time he'd been in prison, he was longing to go free. And then he was let out of prison, and he suddenly discovered the sky is the prison. The sky is the prison. Just existence is an imprisonment of the human soul. That's the nature of a finite world. And we're in this finite world. So therefore, the crucial point for a person is to go free, is to discover freedom. And so that's why choosing a nation, and that nation then should be given freedom, and we went into exile in a very tangible way, going into Egypt, you know, like it's kind of a tangible kind of slavery and limitation. The word Mitzrayim, Egypt, actually has the same letters as the word Meitzarim, limitations. So there's a sense in which any limitation is a kind of Egypt. Like being, you know, being drug dependent or something of that kind. You know, that's one's private Egypt. And breaking out of that, that's one's redemption from Egypt. So, and on a thousand different levels.
I don't see why, just because the world is finite, that it needs to be redeemed. So I don't see the connection.
That it needs what?
To be redeemed.
To be redeemed. I mean, yes, you can say that if somebody's got their own private whatever.
Problem.
Drugs or whether it's a problem. Yeah, I understand that. But just because the world is finite, that's why Shem wanted it. Why does it need to be redeemed because it's finite?
Because
if it wasn't finite, there would be a problem because, you know, it'd be...
Well, you see, it's very interesting that we can look at a finite world and see it as something very beautiful in itself. But the spiritual perspective that I'm trying to present is the idea that the finite world can only be seen as finite by virtue of a hiding of God. Because if God was revealed, then God is infinite. It's like a billion watts in a little light bulb that can only take, it can't take that intensity.
But any entity apart from Hashem is going to be finite, and that's its essence.
You're right. And so therefore the whole project of creation is a tremendous limitation. You see, the very word ha'olam, which means the world or the universe, is the same letters as he'elem, concealment. So you're quite right, that any creation whatsoever, creation is a self-concealing act. The Kabbalists go into it in more detail. They talk about tzimtzum, a contraction, a hiding of godliness in a very intense and emphatic way. So the price of creation is in a sense a kind of exile. And in a way, whose exile? It's God's exile. God is concealed. And then the paradox is that the goal of creation is that God should be revealed. So God is first hidden, and then somehow or other in this world of the hiddenness of God, God should be revealed. And our task as human beings, and particularly as Jews, is to try to reveal God within the world. And the whole idea of Torah mitzvah is so that we can make a kind of a domain where godliness can be revealed. You know, the sort of paradigm of that is the temple or the sanctuary, where godliness is revealed in the temple. But on a more general level, every Jewish home is also a mikdash ma'at, a small temple, where godliness can be revealed in daily life.
Or else to discover where it is revealed. Maybe.
So us finite beings, we've been programmed to want to be part of the infinite.
Yes.
Is this like a programming? We can be programmed to be finite.
Well, you know what, that's like it might not be quite an appropriate comparison, but you know, as far as Karl Marx was concerned, every worker needed to be liberated. He didn't feel that he needs liberation. He's quite happy in his job in the factory, earning money and putting by a little store for his old age, and he's buying another cow, and you know, whatever. That means he hasn't yet studied enough Marxism to realize that he's a slave and he has to be liberated. And what will liberate him? The revolution.
So he definitely needs to be redeemed.
Yes. That's right. So that's the thing. Does finite man and woman just simply relax and enjoy his or her finitude? Or does he want something more? Now, I contend that the cultural life of humanity is an expression of wanting something more, quite apart from religious life, but cultural life. The painting, music. It's a reaching for something beyond. You know, there's a certain level of culture which is just kind of enjoyable. But there's another dimension, particularly of the last century and a half or so, where whether it's art or music or literature, it is expressing a longing, a longing for something beyond.
And you could say that of a mathematician or a philosopher or something like that.
You're quite right. There's a beautiful image of life. This is a famous sociologist called Peter Berger. So he describes life as a cone of light, like a circle of light, surrounded by a great darkness. So medieval man is trying to live inside the cone of light and is frightened to enter the darkness. Modern man tries to attack the darkness and discover what's there. He'll travel to the North Pole. He'll climb Everest. He'll find out what's under the sea. He'll go into outer space. You know, he'll do whatever is dangerous or risky just in order to know, in order to discover. He's not content to be in this little circle of light where his grandfather was and his great-grandfather was. He wants to raid the abyss. So there's a very nice Anglo-Jewish sociologist called Bernice Martin, who used to teach in the same college that Kate used to teach, my wife Kate. And she wrote a very interesting book where she says the raids on the abyss might be through science, might be through art, might be through mysticism. They're all raids on the abyss. You know, so I'm very attracted by the way she puts everything together. Mm. Whether it's...
It's a wonderful phrase, raids on the abyss.
Yes, yes it is. Yeah, good for her. Yeah. All right. So section bet, line 17. Now it's a wonderful feel, the way our Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel, is sort of exploring this discourse of his ancestor, also named Rabbi Menachem Mendel, which is, I don't know if it's the very last discourse that he said in his life, but it was a discourse that he said shortly before passing away. Umamshech, incidentally, his wife, the Tzemach Tzedek's wife, had passed away a few months earlier, and he just outlived her by a few months. Umamshech b'maima, and he continues in his discourse, Sheyesh lahagdim hakitzu mehadrush b'torah or. First of all, let's consider briefly the teaching in a book of Hasidic teachings, which the title means Torah is light. Ala pasuk, on the verse, Lachein emo livnei Yisrael, therefore say to the Jewish people, Ani Hashem, I am God, vohotzeiti etchem, and I'm going to take you out of Egypt. You see, you could, one way of understanding godliness and our relationship with God, God is the redeeming factor. There we are, living in a situation of concealment, of limitation, of exile, of some form of slavery, whether it's an overt form of slavery, whatever it is. You know, people today talk about being slaves to fashion, slaves to the media, but very often people fall into some kind of slavery. And God is the redeeming dimension. So God says, I am God and I'm going to take you free. Shemevi Sham Maimer Rabbeinu Zal, and he quotes the saying of the sages, Mazkirin Yitziat Mitzrayim Balelot. We mention, we remember the going out of Egypt all the time. Every day and at night, we mention the going out of Egypt. It's a constant refrain in Jewish life. All the time we talk about going out of Egypt. You know, whenever there's a prayer or prayer service, at some point it's going to mention the going out of Egypt. Yeah. Kiddush, we mention the going out of Egypt. We mention it all the time. Dahainu gamba leilo. Also at night, not only in the day, but also at night. V'tzarich lahavinu, we have to understand, manishtana nes yitzit Mitzrayim. What's so different about the miracle of the going out of Egypt? Even if we say, yes, it's a miracle. But we had many other miracles. Mikol anisim, what makes it so different from all the other miracles? Shelo yizhanu aleim, where we haven't been told, lahaskiram kol kach, to mention them, to remind ourselves of them, to remember, you know, it could have been the miracle of Hanukkah. So, do we talk about the miracle of Hanukkah every day? No. We talk about it when it's Hanukkah. You know, maybe a lead up to Hanukkah we'll talk about. But we don't mention it every day. Why is it that going out of Egypt? Now, Hanukkah also. If we didn't have Hanukkah, if we didn't have that battle between the Jews and the Greeks and the Jews won, Judaism wouldn't have continued. The whole of monotheism wouldn't have been there. But
the whole of what?
Monotheism.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean.
But coming out of Egypt is a much better story.
Well, it's it's got more reverberations, if you like, and that's what we're trying to explore. What makes it a better story? This is line 21, and he begins to explain Ha'inyan diyetziat Mitzrayim, the concept of going out of Egypt. Shal zem ruch hachameinu zal, this is about this, the sages said, b'chol do vado, in every generation, chayav adam lirot et atzmo, a person has the duty to see himself or herself, b'chol yom, every day, baboker, in the morning, uva erev, and in the evening, ki ilu hu et yitziat Mitzrayim, as if it's the time of going out of Egypt. Now, I must say, this is like an extra Hasidic knetch on this. Because it's true that we remember the going out of Egypt, but there's a way in which Rabbi Shneur Zalman puts it in Tanya. He quotes this idea. Every day, a person has the duty to think of himself as going out of Egypt today. That it's today that we go out of Egypt. It's not just that we did go out of Egypt and we're remembering now something from thousands of years ago. It's something that's happening today, and that's what we are realizing today. Sheyeshno gam ha'inyan diyetziat Mitzrayim, because there's also the idea of going out of Egypt beruchniyot, in spiritual terms. Lamaila, above, be'olamot elyonim, in spiritual realms. And kamochein, and similar lamata, below, benefesh, in the soul, ba'avodata adam, in the service of the person. So, going out of Egypt isn't just a matter of being slaves in a certain geographical place and coming free. It's at every aspect of our being, there is a way of looking at it, that it's in a state of limitation, and we need to break out of there, and we try to break out. And so that's why he says morning and evening, you see, because morning and evening are times of prayer. And prayer is, in fact, a breaking out of limitations. Prayer is a moment of freedom. Right, okay, last line on this.
Hold on, prayer is a moment of freedom?
Yes.
That's an interesting notion. That's a very interesting notion, but I'll leave it there.
No, it's you're right. It is a very interesting.
I've never thought of it in that way. Say it again. Prayer is to what?
Is a moment of freedom.
A moment of freedom.
In Tanya, which you can get online, chapter 47, it explains. It starts off with the words. In every generation, and every day, a person has the duty to think of themselves as going out of Egypt today. And then he says, how do we do that? And it boils down to saying the Shema. The moment of saying the Shema is a moment of liberation. And that it's a very short chapter. It's one of the shortest chapters in Tanya. And that's what it's explaining, chapter 47.
Thank you.
Right, now, line 25, last line on the page. Ba'inim bazeh. Now, let's consider this. The Hinektiv, there's a verse, beautiful verse in Song of Songs. Ma yofit umana amt, how beautiful you are, how pleasant you are. Ahava b'tanugim, love in delight. So the Song of Songs is phrased as a song between a man and a woman, but the sages see it as something which expresses the love between God and the individual, or God and the Jewish people as a whole. And so here it's commenting on this. Let's just see. Shemizeh na'ase lemata benefesh adam. From this comes below in the soul of a person, inyan hasimcha, the idea of joy, bekiyum ha-Torah u-mitzvot, in keeping Torah and mitzvah. If we see the relationship between the individual and God as a relationship between a man and a woman, there is tremendous joyfulness in that, potentially and ideally, in that relationship. And how do we express that? What is the way that we express our union, our connection with God? Through study of Torah and through keeping mitzvah. That is what we do in order to express our connection with the divine, just as a man and a woman do certain things together to express their unity. And that joy is the joy that there is in studying Torah, keeping mitzvah, simcha shel mitzvah, the idea of the joy of a mitzvah. When we do a mitzvah, it should be with incredible joy. Now, it's interesting, you see, in the Torah, it speaks a lot about mitzvah. But it's not necessarily apparent that these mitzvot should be carried out with tremendous joy. But there's a verse in the Torah where it's talking about exile and suffering and terrible things happen. And it says, why does that happen? Because you did not serve God. Now this is line 3 here. Avadate et Hashem Elokecha, you didn't serve the Lord your God, b'simcha u'b'tuv levav merov kol, with joy and happiness of heart. Now the normal way of reading that phrase is, why are all these terrible things happening? Because you didn't serve God. But Rabbi Isaac Luria said, it's not just saying because you didn't serve God. It's because you didn't serve God with joy. You might have kept the mitzvah, but you didn't keep the mitzvah with joy. So keeping mitzvah with joy is a crucial aspect to the keeping of mitzvah. Now, why is there this tremendous joy? Shezel mitzad godel ma'alat gilui or en sof. This is because of the tremendous special quality of the revelation of the radiance of the infinite. Baruch Hu, blessed be He. Lamata, here below in our world, in our room, where we are, Shenaaseh, which takes place, Al Yedei Kiyum HaTorah U'Mitzvot, through the fact of someone keeping Torah, studying Torah, keeping mitzvot. Shuhu Na'ale Yotem Erov Kol. And that is actually something which is superior and greater than this phrase, Rov Kol, the greatness of everything, Shehem Tanugei Olam Abba, which is the delights of the world to come. Now here we have a fascinating idea. We speak about living in the world, and there are physical delights. Pleasant things, very enjoyable things, things that people run after, but they're physical, they're here in this world. Then we have spiritual delights, the delights of the world to come. And the delights of the world to come, we can think of them as being something incredibly greater than the physical delights in this world. And what this is saying is that the delight of studying Torah and of keeping the mitzvah is in fact greater than all the spiritual delights of the world to come. There's a beautiful phrase that 1 hour of the delight of the world to come is worth all the pleasures of this world. And 1 hour of Torah and mitzvah is worth all the spiritual delights of the world to come.
Wow. That's big.
Yes.
That's very big. Could you say that again, please?
1 hour of the world to come, the cool breeze of the world to come, is worth more than all the pleasures of this world. And 1 hour of tshuva emasim tovim, repentance and good deeds, in this world, is worth more than all the delights of the world to come.
You said Torah, studying for Rav, and then you say
I think the phrase is Tshuva Ma'asim Tovim.
Does that imply that? But it includes. You know Torah.
Well, it includes, I mean, with the good deeds would be, you know, so actual practical mitzvot and studying Torah. Yeah, it includes all the different aspects. Yeah, it is remarkable. As the Zohar says many times, if I only came into the world to hear that, it would be enough.
Yes. Does it? It says that many times.
In the Zohar, yeah. Like the Zohar records conversations between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his various students and various of those students between each other, and they get very excited about the things that they hear, you know. So one says to the other, if I only just, you know, came into the world, or I met you just in order to hear that phrase, that's worth everything.
Yes, yes.
You can blow their minds in Fintwald now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to tell them.
What?
You blow their minds.
It goes to Findhorn. You know?
Oh, right, yeah.
They're telling me they're all spiritual now.
Yep, indeed. Now.
What line are you on?
We are line 8.
Right.
7 to 8. Dahainu kolata nugim aruchniim. That means all the spiritual delight. The Gan Eden HaTachton of the lower Garden of Eden. The Gan Eden HaElyon and the higher Garden of Eden. There are many levels of the Garden of Eden. And so all those different levels, nonetheless, the study of Torah and the keeping of mitzvah in this world is greater than them. Uchamavoa, line 9. Uchamavoa b'makom acher, as explained elsewhere. Sheberov kol, that when we use this phrase, the greatness of everything, nichlalim kol agiluyim, all the spiritual revelations, sheyiyu, which will take place, now you got to hold your breath.
Yes, b'meshech.
B'meshech nun alafim yovalot, throughout the 50,000 jubilees. All right, now what are the 50,000 jubilees? Okay, so we have the idea that you every seventh year is a Shemitah year, is a sabbatical year. And then you count 7 times 7, 49 years, and then the 50th year is a Jubilee year, right? So we got 7 and 7 times 7, equals 49, and then the 50th year is the Jubilee. Now let's put that, not in years, but in millennia. We are now in the year, the Jewish year is 5,777. We're in the 6th millennium. So there's the concept that after the 6th millennium, at the end of that, 5999, will be the 7th millennium. Will be the 7th millennium. It'll be the year 6000, and that will be the 7th millennium. So then if you have 7 times 7, so that's 49,000 years, then the 50th thousand is called the Jubilee of the millennia. So it says in Hasidic Kabbalistic teachings that the extent of the existence of the whole project of creation is 50,000 jubilees.
50,000 of those?
Yes, that's
and
right.
And they're already 50,000 years.
Yeah, so that's 250 plus a naught, a naught, a naught, a naught.
No.
Nah.
Less one note, isn't it? It's 50,000 times 50,000. 50,000 times 50,000 is 2,500 million.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. 2,500 million years.
Yeah.
So that is seen as the extent of creation. And we are just at the beginning.
I'll thank God for this.
So we've got a long way to go.
So, yeah, because by modern standards, the age of the universe is meant to be something like between 13 and 15 billion.
Yeah,
that's so right. This is only 2.5.
But here, so what it's saying here is that the concept of joy, of spiritual joy, that we're talking about through Torah Mitzvah, is more than all the possible joy that is there in that 2,500 million years.
Right.
Yeah. In spirit.
And where does this 50,000 come from that's written here?
Well, it's like a Kabbalistic concept. Right. That's,
don't go there.
Well, you can go there, but that's really it. Yeah. The Inyan Zen Aser, and this idea can be seen, Al Yedeit Bonanot, through thinking about, through contemplating the idea expressed in the verse, B'masha Katuv, Kinisgav Shmo Levado, God's name alone is exalted, Hodo Al Eretz V'Shamayim, His radiance is shining onto earth and heaven. Now, this phrase has a very powerful meaning. Hainu, that means shekol ma shenimshachu meya al eretz v'shamayim, everything that shines on the earth and heaven, eretz zeh, this world, gan eden atachton, the lower garden of Eden, v'shamayim, eretz, when it says land, earth, it means the lower garden of Eden, v'shamayim, and when it says heaven, Zegan Edna Elyon, that is the upper garden of Eden. Eino Elo Hodo V'Zivo Shel Shemo, that's only a gleam of God's name. Hainu Ha'ara Bilvad Mibchinat Shemo, just a little gleam of His name. Now you see, the name of a person reveals the person in some way. Like it's the way that you can talk to a person, you can call a person, you can think about the person. There's some sort of encapsulating of the person's identity in their name. So when we speak about the name of God, it's some expression of the revelation of God. And it links Shehi Midat Malchuto. It's the attribute of God's kingship. Shenikra Shmo Melech Aleihem. He's called by His name King over the worlds. And so that quality of being King and the quality of God's name relate together. Ki gam shmo nisgav levado, because even His name is totally exalted, let alone His essence. Right? God's essence is infinitely beyond. But the name of God is exalted, v'rak hodo v'zivo shel shemo, and only a little gleam from His name, hu animshachu meir, that's what shines, al eretz v'shamayim, on earth and heaven, meaning in these spiritual terms, gan eden atachton, the lower garden of Eden, v'gan eden elyon, and the higher garden of Eden, and we can imagine all the way through these different levels of all these millions of years, where more and more spiritual dimensions are being revealed, but nonetheless all that is just a tiny little gleam of the name of the divine, and the name is just a little gleam in comparison to the essence. But the point is that when we study Torah and carry out mitzvah, we're connecting with the essence. We don't feel it, we don't see it, but we can be aware that that's what's happening. And that's what the discourse is trying to make us aware. Now, Umosif HaTzemach Tzedek, now this rabbi of the 1850s, who passed away in 1866, he adds, She'efshar lefaresh inyan zeh, that it's possible to explain this concept, Shegam Shmo Nitzkav Lebado, that his name itself is very exalted. V'rak Hodo V'zivo Shel Shmo, and it's only a gleam of the name, Me'a Al Eretz V'Shamayim, which shines into all these spiritual realms. Al Pi Ma Shekatuv B'Be'er Lidrush Zeh, what it says in explaining this discourse, which is we're talking about a discourse that is a discourse by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, and there is the basic discourse, and then there's like a further explanation of it. Sheyesh b'malchut shtei bechinot, that in the attribute kingship there are two aspects. Now you see, we're aware that there are the 10 sfirot. If we begin with Chochmah, wisdom, understanding and knowledge, and then it comes down that there are kindness, severity, mercy, endurance, majesty or submission, dedication and kingship. Those are the 10 attributes, the 10 sphere. And kingship is the lowest attribute, but that is also the revelation of the divine presence. Now, here we have the idea that there are two qualities in kingship. Line 24. Bchinat chitzoniyot, the external dimension, or bchinat pnimiyot, and the inward dimension. Kamo shekatuv b'zohar harakia, as it says in a book, the Zohar of the firmament, the shining of the firmament, Me'arizal, which Rabbi Isaac Luria wrote. And he wrote it, Reish Parshat Bereshit, next page, page Zayin. And he wrote there at the beginning of the section, Bereshit, Bepeirush Masha Katuv, and he is discussing the verse, Keshoshana Bein Achochim. This is another verse from Song of Songs. Like a lily among the thorns, Kein Rayati, so is my beloved one.
Like a lily among the thorns.
Yes.
So is my beloved one.
So there she is as someone special. Now, what does that mean? Here, the lily means the quality of malchut, the quality of divine kingship. Incidentally, women represent the quality of kingship. So the womanhood itself is an expression of this divine quality. That's why on Friday night there's the custom to say Eshet Chayil, a woman of valor who can find, and it describes this wonderful woman, and that represents both the divine presence and the woman of the home, or womanhood in general. So there is this quality of the lily among the thorns, Shebechinat Chitzoniyut HaMalchut. What does it mean that the lily is among the thorns? The lily is seen as having 13 petals. And that's like something very mystical, because it's like the 13 attributes of mercy, which is a very exalted level. But it comes down, and now it's among the thorns. Here in this world, with the thorns, with all the concealment and the negative dimension that is there. Shebechinat chitzoniyut ha-malchut, that the external dimension of kingship, sheyoredet lebriya yetzira asiya, it descends through the three lower levels of world. The Kabbalists speak of four levels of world. So the higher level, emanation, or atzilut, it's completely pure. But then the lower levels are increasingly impure as we come down to this world with all the problems and chaos which are there in this world. And nonetheless, the divine presence descends into this difficult realm in order to give it life. That is the lily among the thorns. So the lily descends among the thorns in order to give the thorns and that whole realm of existence life. But the inwardness of kingship, She'eina yoredet klal, which never descends at all, hu b'chinat rayati, that is my beloved. So there's the lily among the thorns, which is one aspect of kingship, the divine kingship.
And there's my beloved, who is another aspect, the inward aspect, the higher aspect, which never descends. Va'al pizeh yesh lomar, and following this we could say, shenisgav shmo levado, that when we speak about God's name being very exalted, zeh pnimiyut ha-malchut, that's the inwardness of kingship. V'hodo v'zivo shel shmo, and the gleam of God's name, shenimshach al eretz v'shamayim, which flows through all these different levels of spiritual realm until it comes to the physical realm. Haynu chitzoniyut ha-malchut, that's the external dimension of kingship. V'zeh shekiyam ha-torah u-mitzvot huna le-yoter. And this is why keeping Torah mitzvot is more exalted, mirov kol, than all these delights, shehem ha-ta'anugim, the delights, the Gan Eden ha-tachton of the lower Garden of Eden, the Gan Eden ha-elyon and the higher Garden of Eden, lefi she'enam eila miprinat hodo v'zivo shel shmo bilvad, because all these delights only come from the gleam of radiance of the divine name. Ma she'en ken kiyum ha-torah mitzvot. But when we speak, it's quite different, the case of keeping Torah mitzvot. She'al zeh ne'emar, because when we keep a mitzvah, what do we say? Including when we study Torah. Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav. God has made us holy with his mitzvot. B'mitzvotav mamash, with his very mitzvot. Shebehem melubash o en sof baruch hu. And in the mitzvot is enclosed the radiance of the infinite. Ba'atzma, in itself. U'bichvodo, in its glory. Mamash, really. So that means whenever we keep a mitzvah, lighting a Shabbat candles, doing things which maybe we don't make a blessing on, like keeping kosher. Right, so the whole business of running a kosher kitchen, going to a restaurant, ordering, finding a kosher restaurant, finding a kosher something that one can eat. So we don't actually make a blessing on it, but certainly there is that connection between the person and God at that moment. And so many mitzvot where we do make this blessing, that God has sanctified us with his commandments. So that is a real bonding between the soul and the body, because we keep mitzvah with our physical body. And there is a bonding between us and the essence of the divine, which goes beyond all these 50,000 jubilees and all the different kinds of delight and spiritual delight which are there, because that is only from a gleam of God's name, whereas we connect, and every child is able to connect to the essence of the divine. Line 16. We're nearly finishing now. Va'al yedei yitbonenut zu, and through thinking in this way, yismach v'yagel, we are filled with rejoicing, ba'or ein sof baruch hu, joy in the radiance of the infinite, may he be blessed, Hamit Pashet, which spreads out, Umit Labesh, and is enclosed, Be'esek HaTorah U'mitzvot, in our study of Torah, our being involved with mitzvot, Shehu L'mailu Me'aor V'Gilui, which is higher than the radiance, Shemei Al Eretz V'Shamayim, which shines into the earth and the heaven, B'Gan Eden HaTachton, the lower Garden of Eden, B'Gan Eden HaElyon, the higher Garden of Eden. This is the concept of going out of Egypt. Shebechol dor v'dor, which is every generation. Bechol yom v'yom, and every single day. She'al yedei kiyum ha-Torah mitzvah, because it's through keeping Torah mitzvah. Shebehem melubash o'in sof baruch hu, in which is enclosed the radiance of the infinite ba'atzmo, in himself. U'bichvodo mamash, in his real essence and glory, na'aset, we achieve hayetziyah, the going free, mikol ha-meitzarim u-gvulim, from all the limitations, all the borders, the seda ha-ishtal shalut of the downchaining of the worlds, of the hold of existence.
Downchaining
of the worlds, the idea that the worlds chain downwards. And that is all very beautiful and it's full of wonderful spiritual radiance, but it's limited. And through Torah mitzvah, we break free from that limitation. And that is the going out of Egypt that we're able to do every single day. Well, it's a long discourse and that's a snippet.
Father, well, can I ask you something?
Yes.
Yeah. Just going back a couple of lines, it says, Shal Yedei Kiyum HaTorah or Mitzvot. Could you translate She'al? What is it?
By means of. Al Yedei means by means. By means of keeping Torah Mitzvot.
Okay. So when it says HaTorah U'Mitzvot, why is there a distinction between Torah and Mitzvot?
Well, you see, they're like a pair which are inseparable, and nonetheless they are two different aspects.
Oh.
In order to know what the mitzvot are, we need to study Torah.
Right.
But Torah study is itself a mitzvah.
Hmm.
And even if we're studying a piece of Torah which doesn't directly have anything to do with a mitzvah, you know, we might be studying, let's say, you know, some detail of going out of Egypt or some detail of the life of Moses or of Abraham or something like that, or Elijah the prophet or Rabbi Akiva or Hillel, who when he was asked, what is the whole Torah, while I tell me the whole Torah while I stand on one foot, and he said, what you don't like, don't do to others, that's the whole Torah, the rest is commentary, go and learn. All right, so that is a lovely story, and that story itself is part of Torah. So there's by studying that story, we are also studying Torah. And then comes the practicalities, whether it's Kashrut or Shabbat or putting on tefillin or making Pesach, all the practicalities which are there as well as the mitzvah. And the mitzvah to pray and to feel love of God when we pray. That's also part of the whole bundle.
Mm. So this all started with the head of the year, the head month of the year, right? That's where we started.
Right, and so that is explaining what is different about the fact of us having a connection with God through the giving of the Torah, and as a prelude to the giving of the Torah means going out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So going out of Egypt and getting the Torah and getting the mitzvot and the Torah is all something which transcends completely the whole of the physical universe and everything that it contains, and even the spiritual dimensions of existence. Because it's the Torah and the getting of the Torah. In fact, the next section is about the giving of the Torah and the way in which at the very beginning of the giving of the Ten Commandments, God says, I am God, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. So what's the land of going out of the land of Egypt got to do with the Ten Commandments? Don't steal, don't kill. Because through keeping Torah and learning Torah, we are breaking out of Egypt at that moment.
Right. I must tell you that from a very early age, as soon as I became aware